From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. So good to have you on here. Thanks again to the Detroit area Steelheaders, still recovering from that big event they had on Saturday. A great time, man. It was their annual Wild Game Dinner. I was able to MC that and had a great time meeting some cool people and looking forward to doing it again next year. Also, friends at Pheasants Forever, Ingham County Chapter 467, big event with them on Friday night. And I got to tell you, man, it was a busy weekend full of great outdoors events. And thanks to those folks for having us out. Really, really appreciate it. Thanks to our friends at Darton Archery, also Costa Sunglasses, and of course, Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. And we're going to talk a little bit about some fishing right now, as you know, the Steelheaders event is over for the year, for that part anyway. But getting ready for next year. But let's talk a little bit about coho and about, you know, things heating up on Lake Michigan. Of course, the beginning part of the week saw some snow come through Michigan. And, you know, it's March, still winter. And it's going to do that. We're going to see some snow and be disappointed after some 60-degree days. But doesn't mean that the fish will stop running. And that's why we bring in Jay Wesley from the Michigan DNR. He is the Lake Michigan Basin Coordinator. Jay, how are you?
Good, Duran. How are you?
Good. Good to have you on. It's the first time you've joined us here.
First time on Wild Michigan.
That's
glad
awesome.
To be here.
Yeah, I'm good to have you here because we want to know what's going on with Lake Michigan coho, because here we are, we're coming up on spring and we're getting ready for those salmon runs to make their way. And I see last year that there was some success, and we found out a couple of things about deeper water and some of the life forms that they've been feeding on.
Yeah, so coho last year, for the first time, we started to see anglers going out deep for them, like in over 200 feet of water, and wondered what the heck those coho were doing out there, and checked out some of their stomach contents, and they're feeding on a shrimp out there. It's called mysis. And it's kind of the first time I've heard of that. And already this spring and March, when anglers could get their boats out there when the lake was a little flatter and warmer out, they were already catching coho and getting limits out in that deep water.
Really?
So something different. Not sure exactly what's going on, but it may just be a new... It's a food source that's always been there, this mysis has. But their population might be coming up a little bit. We have lower populations of alewife out in Lake Michigan, and
right. We
know alewife feed on these mysis too. And you know, maybe there's just a bigger population of mysis. The coho are finding them and doing well on them.
Well, and that sounds pretty interesting too. I mean, most animals, fish, everything's going to go to where the food is, and that deeper water, it's, you know, we're just going to basically have to chase them. And as they are chasing these this mysis, this shrimp-like food source, like you said, it might be in greater abundance, and that's what's keeping those fish in those areas.
Right. I would expect the coho to still come in shallow though, like they normally would. For those folks that get out early spring, we usually see a pretty good coho catches in the southern part of the lake, starting in New Buffalo. And as the water warms and as the bait fish, primarily alewife, start to move north, these coho will follow them and eventually get all the way up to Muskegon area. And then the coho make this migration across the lake for much of the summer. But for now, anglers are finding them out in that deep water.
Jay Wesley is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Jay, what are some of the differences as far as habit between cohos and kings and the lake trout that are in there? There have to be some pattern differences that we see, and there's definitely feeding differences.
Definitely. Coho have always made this migration from south to north in the spring and then go across the lake to feed for most of the summer, and they've done that ever since they've been stocked in Lake Michigan. of course, we know in the fall they come back to the rivers where they were stocked and run up those rivers. But Michigan anglers mainly only get a chance at them in early spring and then that fall time. Lake trout are a little different. They tend to stay closer to home, if you will, and tend to be around for anglers to harvest just about any time of the year. They're kind of an opportunistic feeder on whatever's around, whether that be alewife or gobies or smelt. And they probably even eat these mysas that are out there as well. Chinooks are more keyed in to alewife specifically, and they will be where the alewife are. So if you can find a pod of alewife or a ball of bait fish out there that's alewife, more than likely you'll find chinooks around it.
Now, this is the first time I've heard of this mysis, and you say it's a small shrimp-like. I don't know. Is it more of a plankton? Is it a small crustacean-like species? And is it something visible? I mean, really visible to our naked eye?
Yeah, definitely visible. If you open up a stomach, kind of spread the contents out, you'll see more of a crustacean. Visible to the eye, and they do look like a little shrimp. So a little bit different than a, you know, zooplankton. So definitely visible to the eye. We do have a smaller species called hemimysis, which is a invasive species that came in probably in around 2006 or so. That's called bloody red shrimp. That's found in nearshore waters around pierheads and around marinas and stuff like that. But this mysis out deeper is our native form, and they like that deep, cold water.
You know, and that's pretty. It's pretty cool to learn about this stuff. You know, because we got the press release last week. You know, and it's always interesting to me to see what fish are going to start where. And the coho in March, I thought was kind of unique because usually I'm used to it a little bit later on. And to see them out in deep water. Now, when you get to 200 feet of water in Lake Michigan, that's quite a ways out.
Yeah, you're talking at least 10 miles out from most of our ports.
So wow.
That's quite a haul to go out that deep. But the folks that are adventuring out there are having good success. Most of them are limiting out. So these fish are quite active out there, even though it's early March.
That's crazy. We're speaking with Jay Wesley from the Michigan DNR here, talking about the coho bite heating up, even though we're got a bit of a dash of winter in the first part of the week. And Jay, I tell you, what I don't mind about seeing snow this late in the year is the warm-up is that much closer, and we won't have to deal with it for that much longer.
Right. Oh, it's been tough. I know a lot of friends and family like to steelhead fish, and it was quite fun in February when we had 60 degree weather, but the snow kind of slows things down a little bit. But even steelhead fishing's been really good in our rivers this spring, so hopefully that'll continue as well.
Now, are the coho driven more so by water temperature than the amount of light hitting the water?
It's probably a combination. Most fish use light, like we call it photo period, to determine when they're going to make migrations and things like that, as well as temperature. So the two combined usually ensures that conditions will be just right. For example, we've got crews out. We lost our ice in southern Michigan in February, and we usually have to go out and survey for pike and walleye as soon as ice goes out. Crews have been out, and the catches haven't been that good in our nets, and we're figuring, you know, of course, photo period works into that as well, and
sure,
the fish just aren't as active yet, but it's getting close.
All right, we're speaking with Jay Wesley. He is the Lake Michigan Basin Coordinator. Listen to it on the Michigan Talk Network. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Costa Sunglasses. Clearest lenses on the planet. See what's out there with Costa and find what you're missing. If you heard any of this, you can pick it up on the podcast, wildmichiganradio.com.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, Back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. And if you have not seen our Facebook page yet, Facebook.com/Wild Michigan. On Monday, we posted a picture of a pretty non-typical buck. It's a mainframe six, okay? But it is an absolute freak. It looks like, it looks like it's got trees growing out of its head. You need to see it. The bases are probably, 8-9 inches around. They're huge, and you should see this buck. You can go to wildmichiganradio.com. We'll put a link on our Facebook page there, and you can see it for yourself. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm going to go back to talking fishing in Lake Michigan with the Lake Michigan Basin Coordinator. Jay Wesley is joining us here on the phone from the Michigan DNR. Jay, let's talk a little bit about the king salmon in Lake Michigan. I know a lot of their food sources have gone down. We're seeing some lower numbers going on throughout the state. Is there a projected forecast for that fish for this year? I mean, are we going to be doing any restocking? Is it something? I know there has to be a balance between food source and fish. So I don't know if stocking is really an answer for that.
Yeah, so that's completely right. The managers around Lake Michigan, which include Michigan, the tribes, and the other states like Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, we're all trying to balance the number of Chinook salmon that are out there compared to alewife. Chinooks really like the alewife. They don't feed on much else of anything. Of course, occasionally they'll eat a goby if they're around or eat some fleas in the water, zooplankton, but mainly they want alewife. So we've been aggressively changing stocking to keep up with actually a declining alewife biomass in the lake. So we've had to reduce stocking four times now since 1999. And so far it's worked in that we've maintained a good fishery here, a diverse fishery. But there's definitely less Chinooks out there than what there used to be 10 years ago. The alewife are going down because of, I think, overpredation, for one. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of predators out there. And two, the lake's changing. It's not as productive as it once was. Our phosphorus levels are going down, not only from cleaner water going into the lake, but also from zebra and quagga mussels. They're taking out a lot of that productivity. So things have definitely changed. But I think the good news is that I would expect our Chinook salmon catch rates to go up this year. They were pretty low last couple of years, and anglers were concerned. But we seem to have a pretty good couple of good year classes out there that age one and two fish. So I think fish might be a little smaller because they're younger,
mm-hmm.
But catch rates should be better, and we should still see some 20-plus pound Chinooks taken this year.
That's encouraging, too, because, I mean, I know the last few years there's been a lot of complaints from the guys on the water that are there, the charter captains, about seeing less fish. But this, you know what? I'll take a good number of smaller fish because that means they're there.
And something, another wild card we have now in the system is our rivers in Michigan are producing a lot of natural reproduction of Chinook. And that's variable, of course, mm-hmm. weather. And we had a couple of tough years in 2013 and 14, really hard winters. And our wild fish didn't do as well then, so that certainly brought the population down as well. So I would expect, our wild fish numbers to start creeping up, and things should get better.
Jay Wesley is our guest here from the Michigan DNR. Jay, the question I have is, how does a complete freeze over affect the fishery? Because we actually had that here a couple of years ago. It was so cold that we had, 98% of the Great Lakes frozen over, and it was just a weird thing to have seen that. You know, only a few times that I can think of. But how does that affect the fishery at all?
It does, and it depends on what fish you are. If you're one of our original species in the lake, like a lake trout or a whitefish or a cisco, you as a species are used to that, and you actually get better natural reproduction when you have the lake freezing over. We basically get less wave action, less currents, and better survival on some of those eggs. But if you're an alewife, a fish that hasn't been here that long, those cold winters can be pretty tough, and we often see a high mortality in young of year alewife after those winters. And we had almost, I would say, complete failure of the 2013 and 14 year classes of alewife. Mm-hmm. That kind of put us in this hole a little bit for prey biomass. And then our Chinooks, you know, what's most important for them is how well they survive in our rivers after they hatch. And some of our rivers that don't get as much groundwater, you can get ice, called frazzle ice, forming on the bottom of the river because it's so darn cold.
Mm-hmm.
And that can create a lot of mortality for those wild Chinook salmon. So it wasn't real good for alewife or salmon, but probably better for, you know, cisco, lake trout, and probably whitefish.
Yeah, it was. I remember that, and that was a topic that when I got a fisheries guy on, I wanted to ask about that. So, yeah, I appreciate the information on that. Anything else you'd like to share with us? I mean, this has been really enlightening for me, and I know we've got a whole season ahead of us, despite, again, the cold weather earlier in the week. But we've got a whole season ahead of us here.
Yeah, well, you mentioned talking to the steelheaders early in the show, and steelhead fishing on our rivers has been really good this year,
mm-hmm.
better than last year, and kind of it'll probably be more drawn out that we had some warm weather and now this cold weather. So still hearing about people catching steelhead on the beaches and piers, meaning there's some fresh fish coming in, and hearing reports of people catching steelhead that are already spawned out. So there's some fish that have been in a while and fresh fish coming in, and you know, all the rivers have been pretty decent, and the size is up too. I'm hearing of 10 plus pound steelhead being caught.
So, awesome.
It's a good time to be out.
Yeah, if you've ever gotten into something 10 or 12 pounds before, it's a fight on the river, and it's awesome. I've done it in the Muskegon River, and that's just, it's a great time, and I'd love it to death.
Yeah, it's a good time to get out. Steelhead are, I think, one of the best fighting fish out there, especially in a river when water temps are coming up. They're going to sometimes fly 3 feet out of the water. They're going to try to get you tangled up in logs. It's a lot of fun. If you can land them, that's huge. That's quite the challenge.
Absolutely. Jay Wesley is the Lake Michigan Basin Coordinator. Jay, appreciate your time here on the show.
You bet, Ryan.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Yep, it's my pleasure.
Absolutely. Michigan.gov/DNR is where the link to get you to the DNR website. And, of course, you can find all the information there. More coming your way. It's a whole weekend full right here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. Appreciate you joining us here on the Michigan Talk Network. And we're going to talk a little bit about concealed carry. Not so much, you know, going through the process of getting your CPL here in Michigan, but ways to do it and the way to find the proper and the best fitting holster for you. If you want to go inside the waistband, you want to go outside the waistband, you're looking for a paddle, you're looking for something, you know, it depends. And you know what, when these things are in clam packs on a peg in the store, it's very difficult to find what you're looking for exactly. You can end up with several of them as I have. I have a CPL. My wife has a CPL. And, you know, I want to find something that is comfortable by all means and, you know, and affordable. And my good friend Brian Keel over at Gander Mountain on the west side of Lansing said, you know, hey, you need to check out Alien Gear holsters. And I've been looking at them and looking at them. You know what? I said, I'm just going to go right to the source. And I've got Mo Regalado joining me here from Alien Gear Holsters. Good morning. How are you? I'm doing well. Thank you very much. And you're awful polite for someone who has been in radio before.
I am awfully nice, aren't I? I should sound more mean and more terse.
That's kind of an old radio joke, because those of us have been in this business for quite a while. I think we just develop a certain way of life that it's going, you know, what do you do? We've been through it all.
Yeah, no, that's definitely it. And it's very funny, because when I was on air, a lot of people would call me and ask me if I was a tall blonde. And I'm like, no, I'm a short little Mexican lady. I just have a lot of energy.
That's even better yet.
Yes. So it's just, you know, it's the whole theater of the mind thing. So you can think whatever you want. If you want to think I'm a tall blonde, that's okay. We'll go with that.
You know, that's so funny you should say that, because I'm actually a shorter Mexican guy. It kind of works out well.
That's fantastic.
the really funny thing is, you know, my last name is Martinez, and a lot of people don't even put that together. You know, it's like, oh, okay. No, really. I'm that guy. You know, so you get it. And that's what makes this is going to make this so much fun, is you've been in the business. You've been in the business of radio, and it's an interesting business. And some of us get brave and say, you know what, as much as this job is a drug, I would like to make a living and enjoy myself.
Now you're sharing trade secrets.
Oh, no, that's not a trade secret. Everybody that knows me knows that this job is a labor of love. And yeah. It's been a learning experience from the very first show. And that's why we grab these great guests on here, is to talk about these things. Now, you're with Alien Gear Holsters, and you folks manufacture conceal carry holsters. And they're, what people don't realize is there's a lot to know about wanting to conceal.
There is quite a bit to know. You know, there's obviously, we're just one of many brands that are out on the market. You have to find the right fit. You obviously, the first thing that you're going to start with is, what are you going to carry? That's always, you know, that's always a question that we get a lot through our website, through our community page. We actually have a fan page. It's called Area 51. You can find us on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you guys have questions, if anybody there has questions, just hop on over to the community page. And I think we have like 9,200 members right now.
Wow.
So they'll be more than happy to help you out. They're a lively group. They're very active. They're very funny. So remember to bring your funny bone when you come to the page. But again, it's what gun are you going to conceal with? So it just depends. We have everything from full size to subcompact. We even have anything super small. So it just depends. Again, what you want to carry.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing I've noticed, you know, I want to talk about inside the waistband, inside the pants, holsters. I'm kind of a bigger guy, so some of those really aren't that comfortable. And what I'm seeing is, you know, finding a holster with adjustability as to the level, as to how high you would like your firearm to ride.
Right. So with Alien Gear holsters, and one of the things that our CEO, Thomas Tedder, so it's kind of interesting if you don't know the story of Alien Gear holsters. Our CEO decided to create his own holster because he couldn't find one for the gun that he was carrying. And so he, you know, literally, I mean, we are the American dream, because he started in a kitchen, and then he moved to a shed, and now we have this big, giant facility in Post Falls, Idaho. And so he created something that he wanted. And one of the biggest things was having that adjustability. So when you receive an Alien Gear holster, it's completely customizable to the way that you would want to carry. You can adjust cant, you can adjust ride height, and you can adjust retention. So everything is completely customizable. There's actually three different adjustments that you have. And then, of course, from there, you can adjust the clips on how you want those to sit. So it is totally up to you how you want to carry.
You know, and that to having that availability of adjustment is very important, because if you buy just a simple nylon holster, there's no adjustment. I mean, it's just, you know, or leather one. There's no adjustment. You get that, and as long as you're comfortable with that, hey, cool. But, you know, there are times maybe, you know, we're you know, physically changing, and our holster needs to change with us.
Yes.
Is that fair? Is that a fair comment?
That is a fair comment.
I'm being blunt as possible.
Hey, how did my pants get smaller? They must have shrunk in the wash.
Exactly. No. Yeah. No, not so much. Not so much. And I know that firsthand as well, too. Mo Regalado is our guest here on Wild Michigan. She is with Alien Gear Holsters, and we are talking about finding the right conceal holster, if you'd like to do so, inside the waistband, outside the waistband. Let's talk a little bit about the angle of the firearm. Are these adjustable?
Yeah, the cant is fully adjustable, and when you receive it, we believe in the way that our holster is set up is the FBI cant. But when you receive your holster, obviously, you can adjust every single part of it. And I don't have one. Obviously, I don't have one on me right now, so I can't touch it and talk to you as I'm trying to explain it. So when you receive it, we have a parts pack that comes with it, and you will receive different size spacers that we manufacture. You'll also receive different size screws that we manufacture, and you'll receive an Allen wrench that goes with it that you can completely customize it from outside of the bag. Or, as we've been told by a lot of our fans, they never adjust it. They just pop their gun in, put it on, and that's it. That's the ride that they want, and that's exactly how they want it set up. But you can go deeper concealment. You can obviously go higher as well.
Yeah, and it's important too, and to know your position, to have that comfort level. I mean, so it's there, the same place, same time, every time. I think is something that you need to look at also. I mean, you can adjust it yourself, which is great, but you have to have that level of comfort. Should, God forbid, you ever need to, use your firearm, take your firearm out for assistance.
Right. And we definitely recommend that people, you know, that you work with your retention, that you work with your adjustment until you get it exactly to where you want it. And we definitely suggest that you practice with your holster. We have several people who do the IDPA, use our outside the waistband holster, and they practice with it just so that they can get that right feel and that right draw. And the reason why is, obviously, you're wearing this in the event that something should happen. So we definitely, definitely want you to train with the equipment that you have. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we actually, you know, we talk about in our community page, something that we talk about around the office, is the fact that how important it is for you to train and to shoot the gun that you carry, which is, I know it seems kind of funny that I'm actually even saying that. How many people actually, they'll go to the range and they literally will not use their carry weapon?
Absolutely. Mo Regalado is our guest here. Mo, hang on. I want to talk to you more about that exact same thing that we're mentioning right now. So hang on, please. We're going to talk with Mo more here on Wild Michigan, talking about Alien Gear holsters on the Michigan Talk Network. Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up the podcast, all the shows right there, and find our great guests and our sponsors like Lucky Buck Mineral, lucky-buck.com. Lucky Buck Deer Mineral out right now. Great time is to get it out right now. Maybe you're out shed hunting. Maybe you want to put your Lucky Buck out and refresh those spots or start some new ones for the upcoming season. But by all means, know your location and know the CWD rules here in Michigan, and they'll have them posted at lucky-buck.com. another great Michigan product, bringing you Wild Michigan. And back to Mo Regalado from Alien Gear, carry holsters, concealed carry holsters. And Mo, we didn't mean to cut you off of that last spot, but let's pick up where we did leave off. Very important for those planning on carrying, for those either open carry as we can here in Michigan, or concealed carry if you have a permit, to practice with the firearm you will be carrying.
Definitely. It's such an important thing. And it seems kind of silly that we're even mentioning it. But we were talking in the break, there's so many people who we found who conceal carry, but then they don't actually practice with the firearm that they're concealed carrying with. So, you know, if you're in that situation, you're going to have to know what it feels like to pull that gun out. There's a gentleman from Take Aim TV, and his name is Brian Kirby. You can follow him on Instagram. And he actually uses our concealed carry. He uses our Colt Tech 3.0. And you can see him doing dry fire practices and different things on what he does in his own living room. So you can see this person who is just like you, you know, just same body shape, whatever. And you can see how he's practicing drawing his gun and then reholstering. And again, I would recommend that for anybody. It doesn't matter what holster you're carrying. Please practice.
Absolutely. And, you know, it doesn't always make perfect, but in this case, it makes a heck of a lot safer.
Yes, definitely. It's so simple. You know, you practice with your car, right? I mean, you wouldn't just get into a race car and decide to take it off. You would have to practice with it. I would assume that would be the same thing. Since
sure.
I've never driven a race car before. I would have to assume that's the same thing.
Yeah, I've ridden in a few, but yeah, I don't want to drive them. I've been with professionals, but seriously, getting used to what it is. I mean, you took the time to research the firearm. You took the time to hold it, purchase it, probably fire it. You should probably take the time to practice with the side with your holster, either inside or outside, whatever you feel most comfortable with, and by all means get to know it, you know, so you know the functionality of it the minute you draw it from that holster.
Exactly. You have to know what it's going to feel like, and so, you know, and what I love about our holster company and what we do that's a little different is our warranty. Our warranty is amazing, so you can try our holsters risk-free for 30 days. You know, I mean, if you don't love it, you don't like it, we'll take it back, no questions asked. We also have fully swappable shells. So what that means, if you get rid of your gun, so why you would do that, I don't know. or if you buy a new gun that you're planning on concealed carrying, you let us know, and we will swap out those shells for free for life.
And that's important too, because not, you know what, you know, like right now I've got a SIG 250 compact that I really, really love, and mm-hmm. it's got the rail on it, and I just looked it up as we're speaking. Yes, you have it, which is great. But you know, there might be a time maybe down the road very soon that I want something a little thinner, something a little bit more, you know, less confining to my figure, if you will, you know, and to be able to swap out that shell, you know, is awesome.
Right. And, you know, we have, so that the form can be found on our website. You just go on there, or you can, of course, come onto our Facebook page. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. I mean, seriously, we're everywhere. But we'll put the link on there and tell you how easy it is. It's an exchange form. That's it. You send it back. We send you the new shell. And then the other thing that we have is we have our forever warranty. It's part of our ironclad triple guarantee that we absolutely love. And we're really, really proud of. Any part of your holster breaks for any reason, we'll repair it or replace it for free, no questions asked. We've actually had people like send us pictures like, seriously, my dog chewed up my holster. You know, it's usually that one thing where, like, you know, my dog ate my homework. No, seriously, their dogs have really chewed up their holsters, and we're like, okay, send you out a new one. They're like, you got to be kidding me. Nope, we'll send you out a new one.
And that's how a company should stand behind their workmanship. I think that goes above and beyond when the dog chews it up, and I can see that happening. Look, I really can.
Yeah, it's funny. We actually had on our community page, we had a gentleman who it was shipped out to him, and then it was stolen off of his front porch, because you know that's been a nice thing for people to do.
Sure.
And so he contacted us, and he actually came onto the community page to say, "Hey, Alien Gear Holsters, the most incredible company. I called them to let them know that my holster had been stolen, and we were tracking it and blah, blah, you know, through USPS." And he said, "You know, I don't know what to do." And they're like, "Don't worry about it. We'll send you a new one."
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was really cool. I mean, so it's really neat on my end, since I run the whole social media side of it,
mm-hmm.
to hear from our, you know, our customer service department, how well they're doing and how they're treating people. And we get that a lot. So it's not the stealing part, but we get the right part where giving people accolades for our customer service. And we really do pride ourselves on that.
Mo Regalado is our guest here from Alien Gear Holsters. Mo, I want to talk about construction and why you choose the materials you do for comfort.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So we originally started with the original cloak tuck, which is leather, and we do still offer that. That's actually still a really popular holster. People love their leather. Leather, of course, is going to shape to your body, but it is going to require a little bit of breaking time because it's leather. And now we have our Cloak Tuck 3.0, which is, you know, our most popular holster. It features a neoprene backer, and what's nice about that is it's breathable. So, you know, as it sits against your skin, or definitely we recommend wearing an undershirt. In case you don't like the neoprene sitting up against your skin.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, we have what we call it's a thermal elastomer. It's proprietary to us, and it has our alien skin texture that allows it, you know, when your gun goes in there, it fits nice and snug, and it gives it a little bit of grip. Now, we use Voltaron for our shells instead of Kydex. Voltaron it's a stronger material than Kydex. It's going to last longer. Going to resist, you know, sometimes with Kydex shells, extreme temperature changes have a tendency to cause it to have some cracks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Voltaron is not going to do that. Actually, even at trade shows, the owner of the company has stood on the Voltaron shells and like bounced on them to show people how strong they are. And then, of course, inside, so what makes it neat, inside our holsters, we have a spring steel core. Okay, Mo, that's great. I don't understand what that means. Well, literally, we put a piece of steel in there, in between those two, and then that is sandwiched in between some nylon, ballistic nylon, and so that actually helps that holster keep its shape. So after a while, when you've been concealed carrying, your gun is going to make that holster sag, and this prevents that from happening. It helps keep that shape as it sits against your body.
AlienGearHolsters.com is the website where you can find what we're talking about. We'll have a link on our website at WildMichiganRadio.com. We'll put that up there for you. Mo, I tell you what, this has been very cool to talk with you and learn about this. Like I said, Keel's been going on and on. You got to get an alien. Okay, I'm going to talk to him first. And because we're lucky enough to have the opportunity to bring you on the show, we get to learn. And again, it's all about comfort and you know, what your budget brings into play, but I'm looking at, you know, for mine, what I'm seeing is like $43.
Yes. Our Cloak Tuck 3.0 starts at $43.88. Mm-hmm. We do recommend that you wear a belt with our holsters. We of course offer the best gun belt in the world on our website. And I have to laugh because I didn't own one of our belts. I got one for my husband who's in law enforcement.
Sure.
And he told me, he's like, "Babe, this is like the best, the most comfortable belt I've ever worn." I'm like, "Yeah, right, whatever." He's like, "No, really." So I wore his for a day. And I ended up going and ordering myself one because they are the most comfortable belts. We have it's a 14-ounce leather, and then inside of that, there's a steel core. It is going to keep its shape, and you're not going to sag.
All right.
You're not going to sag on it. So thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not at all. AlienGearHolsters.com. Mo Regalado. I'm already on the website. I'm ordering now. So thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. You can find all the details for this interview and all the others from this show. More coming. Whole another hour coming your way here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.